What's going on, baseball fans? Welcome back to another edition of the Ross Rhetorical. And boy, has it been a long time since we've done one of these. I actually, when I broke out my microphone to do the show, I had to wipe some dust off of it. That's how long it's been. And that is because not only have I had to move, I moved apartments, but Matt moved. He moved from California to Austin, Texas for a job. So neither of us have been set up, but we're back. Everything's ready to go. Matt is here with me. Matt, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. Just standing up since I have no chairs to sit on.
Now, this is funny because we've actually recorded this episode. This is our second try at this. We lost the first 41 seconds of our last episode because I hit a button. But you were mentioning how you don't have anything in the new apartment because you just got there. But everything's good there. The move went well, the drive, all that stuff, or flying or whatever you did.
Yeah, I flew in. Thankfully, I didn't have to drive from California. Flight was a little bumpy. I think there was a lightning storm and thunder and rain while we were landing. So
it went well.
Yeah.
It was good. So now you weren't here for the last episode, which I did solo. Did you get a chance to hear my solo debut on the show?
I did.
What'd you think?
I think you should make it a regular segment. You can just do an extra one every year. Big bucks.
Yeah, that'll earn me the big bucks, exactly. But this is interesting because our top story this week, which only happened a couple of hours ago, is a topic that we talked about the last time you were on the show, Matt.
That's right.
And that is a baseball fight. And this is interesting because, we'll get into it here, but Manny Machado and Yordano Ventura had a square off. And to be honest, I wasn't watching baseball at the time. I was making dinner. I was sitting in my kitchen, getting everything ready to go. And Matt sent me a text and said, "We have to talk about the fight on the show tonight." And I'm like, "The fight?" And in my head, I'm thinking, Matt's not a UFC fan. We don't do a UFC show. I'm like, what's he talking about? So I hopped onto Twitter and I saw the Deadspin article about Manny Machado charging the mound and landing some good shots on Yordano Ventura. And I watched the video, which is posted, and I will link the article as always. And boy, did Machado get some chops in. He got some licks in on Ventura. He planted him with a WWE-esque DDT. That was perfect form. And Matt, this isn't the first time we've seen Ventura involved in one of these incidences. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he was involved in the one with the White Sox and Jeff Samardzija, correct?
Believe so. And then also, didn't he get into it with Mike Trout?
That I'm not sure of. The first one that came to mind when I saw Ventura was the White Sox.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Because that one was in the first couple of days into the season that they got into that. But to set the picture for everybody, Ventura threw at Machado earlier in the game. This time up, he went up and in and hit him. Machado, not happy about it, threw his helmet and attempted to run toward the mound, but he actually was still a little bit stung from the hit. He sort of limped out there at first. And then, adrenaline sort of took over and he, went at Ventura and they started brawling. And Ventura knew what was coming right away. He threw his glove and hat like he was ready to throw down, like he knew what was going to happen. And both Machado and Ventura got ejected. And Matt, this goes back to our conversation a couple weeks ago with the Rougned Odor, Jose Bautista thing, and just why these things happen and their place in the game. And, Ventura is known for doing this. This isn't his first, cup of tea with this. And I think whatever suspension he's going to get, because I think he will get suspended, will be interesting to see because it may be different than some of the other guys that we've seen suspended for this. But what was your takeaways from this fight?
I think this is the second time Machado's kind of been in the spotlight for the wrong reason in his career. I think it wasn't last year. I think it was 2 years ago now when he tossed the bat at Fernando Abad. I know he missed by, about 40 feet, but
the old Roger Clemens.
Yeah. This one, not as stupid, obviously, as throwing a bat, but he's definitely going to get suspended. Yordano Ventura was probably going to get suspended. Or at least ejected for hitting Machado. He probably would have got one or two games, or at least one game, maybe a 5-game suspension, so he missed a start. But Machado has no reason to go out and charge the mound. I know he's pissed, but you can yell at a guy Also, you don't have to go punch him in the face, because now Machado's probably going to get at least a 5-game suspension. I don't think it'll be for as much or as many games as Odor.
Right.
Just because he was, I mean, he was provoked at least way more than Odor probably was. So he won't, I don't think he'll get the 8 or 7 games that Odor eventually wound up with, but he's definitely going to miss more than a few games, I think.
And this is a very different situation, I think, from what happened with Odor and Batista. There was a ball thrown at Batista, which sort of escalated things, but the slide at second was what prompted Odor to get annoyed and throw his punch. This is a little different because Machado, you know, didn't have to run out there, like Matt said. He chose to run out there. You know, there was no contact between the two of them, like in the Odor Batista slide, that could have been taken as intent. You know, Ventura was probably trying to throw at Machado, but I don't know his intent. I'm not going to try to sit here and tell you what his intent was. But, you know, you look at what Ventura has done in the past, you know, his previous history for this, and you can assume that that's what he was trying to do. But this isn't the first time we've seen Machado get a little heated in these issues. I forget, it was somebody mentioned on Twitter that Machado has gotten angry in the past, and I forgot with who. Matt, do you know off the top of your head?
I mean, the only one that really comes to mind is the one that we talked about already with Abad.
I don't have it in front of me. Somebody tweeted it earlier. I'll try to look it up when we go to break. But, you know, both of these guys in the moment, hot-headed, and you see it boil over into that little brawl on the mound. And the interesting takeaway that I had from it was our boss, Justin, on Twitter, tweeted out as a Royals fan to his followers, how many of you Royal fans are done with Yordano Ventura because of this? And the responses have been sort of all over the place. A lot have said, yes, you know, we don't want somebody like this representing our organization, yada, yada, yada. But then there's the other hand that here's a 25-year-old, under control, good starting pitcher. You know, why would you want to get rid of that? And that sort of comes to the crux of the issue of where does this beanball type of culture, as it's being called, play a role in, you know, you constructing a roster? Do you want players like that who are going to go out and, you know, sort of, in the eyes of the baseball world, protect your players and protect the game and settle issues out on the field? Or do you want to build a roster again with guys that aren't going to do that, which are going to, you know, play the game the right way, not do these sort of actions that escalate conflict when there doesn't have to be? I thought that was a really interesting perspective because, you know, this is just an incident, but to take a step back and say, you know, Ventura's role in the Royals is sort of as a key figure for a team that just won the World Series, you know, is trying to repeat and people are coming to see them play. So to have this sort of negative connotation because of Ventura's antics isn't the best for a franchise. And, you know, that plays a role in how general managers weigh certain players.
Yeah, I guess my answer would be, you know, there are those players that we've mentioned before that say they're protecting the game when they hit someone, kind of like what the Rangers did with Batista. But Ventura is just starting things for no reason, it seems like. I want to say every time that he was involved in a scuffle last year, I did look. There was a weird incident with Trout where he hit a single up the middle, and then Ventura started yelling at him as he ran to first base. And then there was that incident with the White Sox, and I want to say the A's also got into it with Ventura. Brett Lowry comes to mind.
That sounds about right. He's another hot-headed player.
I think, obviously, I think it's worth holding on to Ventura. I mean, just a year ago, he had a 4.08 ERA and a 3.57 FIP. So he's still valuable. He's not crazy valuable, but he did have a 2.7 F4. So this year, though, that's just not been there. He's got a 5.98 K per 9 and a 5.11 walk per 9. So I would say you should still keep him, but he doesn't deserve to really be in the starting rotation right now when he's walking over 5 guys every 9 innings. I think a demotion to the minors could help. I don't know. I don't really know enough about the Royals organization to say who could step in and fill his spot, or, you know, even if they need one. A lot of teams have gotten lucky this year with the off days and have been able to go with a 4-man rotation for a while. So I don't know if they have that option or not, but I think you definitely still need to hold on to Ventura. He's under control. He's only 25 years old, but he definitely should not be in the rotation right now.
I've heard some rumblings about them, you know, down the road, moving him to the closer role. because of how fast he throws, stuff like that. But it appears as though the Royals are going to be without him for some stretch of time if he does get suspended, maybe two or three starts.
It wouldn't be that long.
You don't think so?
Well, no, because, I mean, for a pitcher to have to miss two or three starts, some MLB would have to suspend him for about 10 games.
And you don't think you'd get 10 games for this?
No.
Because I've heard some people say that you know, he could get double a normal one-start suspension that starters normally get, which is 5 games.
I don't think so. I mean, if he'd hit Machado in the head, I definitely see that. But he hit him in the ribs, which is where you teach pitchers to throw. If you're going to throw at a guy, you're supposed to hit him in the ribs. So I can't see him getting 10 for this.
That's interesting because I could see them sort of making the argument that he threw at him before and missed, you know, then threw at him again. His previous for being this type of player, you know, could see him end up taking this. There are people who want him thrown out of the league, and I'm quick to, you know, pump the brakes on that a little bit because, you know, guys who use PEDs get thrown out of the league. I don't think, and I'm the biggest proponent of trying to get purposely throwing at players out of the game. But I don't think you need to throw a guy out for this. Yes, he's a hothead and he's known for escalating these issues. So maybe you err on the side of caution and suspend him longer to make a point, which we've seen Rod Manfred tend to do with these sort of issues across a various spectrum. He tends to try to punish people so it doesn't happen again. So I think those who want him thrown out of the league are going a bit too far. I understand your logic behind it, but that's never going to happen. I think a happy medium is probably maybe 10, 15 games.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't. So I'll put it to you this way. I think he's going to get 5. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 10 or 15. I really wouldn't.
If he gets 15-game suspension, I will buy you dinner from Austin.
Nice. So now we have a nice old dinner bet on the line. That's good. I'll take that.
I mean, Vicente Padilla hit people in the face on purpose, and he never got 15 games. And I could be wrong on this, but I don't think Manfred has anything to do with suspensions of this nature. He's, you know, in charge of the domestic violence suspensions for sure. But
is this a Joe Torre thing?
Who is the
director of?
I think it's an arbitrator. I'm not sure, but it's
because in the NHL 90, they have a director of player safety.
I'm 90% sure it's not Rob Manfred.
Okay. Well, whoever's in charge may do this. I still think he's only going to miss one start, but it wouldn't surprise me if 10 or 15 was on the table. It really would. Matt, I have a really interesting story, mainly because it's not a topic that we talk about on the program very much. Did you get the article that I sent you from The Star?
I did.
Okay, and I'm just going to read the headline to this, and then we can sort of get into the crux of what the story was about. But the title's from thestar.com, Toronto paper covers the Blue Jays. Study says pitch clocks in Major League Baseball could increase risk of injury to pitchers. And when I read this headline, because I read the whole article, and it has some really good stuff into it, and I'm gonna pull from the article in a minute. But when you first read this headline, it's sort of counter to what you would think. You would think speeding up the game means, you know, less time that the pitcher has to be on the mound. He doesn't have to, you know, throw as much because he's trying to, you know, he doesn't have that much time to throw. And, you know, injuries could go down. But you read into this study, which was done by McMaster University, which to those of you that are stateside, I believe that is a college in Canada. They do this study, and they didn't use real players. What they did was they used statistics from FanGraphs, which Matt and I both love, and they used that to create simulation models to show what different rest times in between pitches does. So let me, Matt, I don't know if you read this deep into the article, but I'm going to use the example that they use. For pitchers who work at a quick pace, like the Blue Jays' Marcus Stroman, who this year is averaging 19.4 seconds between pitches, a 20-second pitch clock isn't likely to have much impact. But for a slower-working pitcher like David Price of the Red Sox, who takes more than 25 seconds between pitches, the reduced recovery time could have a major impact. For Price, in particular, Sun's study found that his muscle fatigue inside a given inning would rise from a peak of 7.2% at his own pace to 8.7% if he had to throw every 20 seconds. And I know that's a lot of inside baseball mumbo-jumbo, not to get punny with the inside baseball term, but that increase in muscle fatigue is important because the crux of this study is that there's a bunch of different factors that go into pitchers' health, and I can find the five that they used if you give me a second. It's somewhere in the piece here. But they looked at muscle fatigue and how your muscles actually need rest, and because these pitchers are throwing so, you know, high leverage and just trying to give it their all every time they throw, that rest in between pitches is actually potentially saving them from an injury rather than, you know, being detrimental, which I thought was really interesting because games are so long as it is. But actually that lengthening of the game actually can help a starting pitcher not get hurt. The four main factors in injury risk, according from this study, are force, repetition, posture, and duration. And a pitch clock wouldn't change the first three. Guys are going to throw with the same amount of force. They repeat their motion every time. Their posture is the same because they want to keep the same motion. But the duration between pitches would change if they change a pitch clock. So guys who are have a cadence and know how they throw are now going to have to change that. And that may impact the stress that's put on their UCL, which is the key towards, you know, when that gets hurt, you have to have Tommy John surgery. So the sort of balancing act that Major League Baseball has to have now is what's more important, speeding up the games, which have crept back over 3 hours this year, or pitcher, you know, health, which has been a huge epidemic the past couple of seasons with big name guys going down with Tommy John surgery. So if you're Rob Manfred, if you're the Major League Baseball, you have to decide, am I okay with games being a little bit longer with the added benefit of our stars of the game, the Steven Strasburgs, the Noah Syndergaards, the David Prices of the world being healthy and being able to pitch, or do I want the game to be faster and maybe not have those guys?
Yeah. I definitely understand what the article is saying. You know, that 5 extra seconds, maybe, you know, in between pitches sounds like it's not going to help at all, but it's part of your rhythm. And then I want to say David Price actually talked about this a couple years ago when pace of play started to be talked about almost what seemed like a regular basis. If you cut down on the on how long a pitcher can, you know, hold the ball, I mean, like you said, we're seeing guys like David Price with 25 seconds in between pitches. That if you set a limit, let's say, you know, 20 seconds and there's a countdown clock, there's only so long that a pitcher is going to have to throw, which means that he's, you know, let's say it takes him 10 seconds to get back on the mound. There's only 10 seconds for him to get the sign and release the ball. That's going to be, that would fundamentally change the game in terms of base running, because that batter would be able to just count to 20. And, you know, depending on what the penalty is going to be, if it's a ball or something, the pitcher's not going to want to risk that, and he's going to throw the ball. So for base stealers, they would just get this tremendous advantage, because they know exactly how much time some pitcher has to deliver the ball. They'll get a better jump. Obviously, I think you'd see pickoffs get increased just to keep him honest, so he can't get that huge lead that, you know, you see a lot of guys get against someone like John Lester when they know he's not going to throw over. It'd be kind of the same situation with a clock. If you know he's got to do something with the ball, you're going to have a better jump. So I think that is also something that, you know, it got talked about a few years ago, however long it was, with David Price. I'll try and find the article later. I don't think anyone in baseball would really like that rule. I don't think the hitters would like it. The pitchers would obviously hate it. Managers would not be happy. So I don't think that one we're going to see very soon.
And we talk about so much in baseball about pitch counts and inning limits with all of these guys. And fatigue is, you know, the sort of the middle of the issue is sort of what is behind all of it. Is they want to limit a pitcher's fatigue, and they do that through limiting their pitch count, limiting their innings limit in a season so they don't get fatigued and wear out their arm. But going deeper, peeling the onion a little more, the number of pitches per inning are obviously a big factor. Your stressfulness of the pitches, how high leverage the situation is, sort of impacts the fatigue on the arm, and then the time in between pitches are all factors that go in toward a pitcher's fatigue. And changing the amount of time that guys have in order to throw could affect all three of those issues. If guys have only 20 seconds to throw, they may have to throw more pitches to get through an inning because some of their pitches may be waste pitches because they're just trying to throw to beat the clock, and they'll take the ball and have to throw again. Well, that goes into fatigue. if you have to throw every 20 seconds, that puts more high leverage, more stress on the pitch, right? Because you got to think of all the things that a pitcher goes through when they're trying to figure out what pitch they're going to throw, where they're going to put it. You know, what's this guy good at hitting? Where is he weak? What can I do here? What can I do there? Well, now they only have 20 seconds to do all that. And then now you're reducing the time between pitches, so there's no recovery period. Now, I don't know if any of you know this, but there is actually a rule in the books for Major League Baseball that a pitcher should only take 12 seconds between pitches. And it can be enforced, but it's never been. Umpires don't enforce the rule. They're talking about a 20-second pitch clock, but they already kind of have this rule in place. It's just not enforced. So, you know, maybe there's some middle ground here where maybe they make it 25 seconds and they start actually enforcing the rule instead of having a rule in the books and not enforcing it. But I do think that there are some consequences to both towards trying to speed up the game versus, you know, trying to protect pitchers. And I think there's going to have to be a balance struck here because for Major League Baseball, having these star pitchers on the field are what's important. Like, you want the Steven Strasburgs, the Zach Greinke's, the Clayton Kershaw's. You want to see those guys pitch. And, you know, potentially putting more risk on their arm when there's already an astronomical amount of risk on their arm could potentially hurt the game more than the game would be saved by bringing the time down on games, bringing them inside of 3 hours, and maybe getting more casual fans into the stadiums. I don't know. This was fascinating to me because, you know, studies are the be all end all. You know, if you can put science behind anything, it's sort of a big deal because now you have facts to back up what you're saying. And I am sure that this study will find its way into Major League Baseball's offices when they sort of figure out these new pace of play rules because they're going to come up in the next CBA talks. So I thought that was interesting. Matt?
Yes?
I'm going to test your Giants trivia history. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
When we come back, I have a bunch of stories to get to, but I'm going to tease a couple of them here. We have Madison Bumgarner trivia, which I'm going to test to see how good you are. We're going to talk about a top prospect that is going to make his debut tomorrow when this episode gets released. And we're going to talk about the worst contract in New York and how it's not any of the players that you're thinking of right now. That next on the Roster Rhetorical. Welcome back, everybody, to the Roster Rhetorical. And Matt, how's your trivia brain today? Are you feeling it? Are you feeling up to the challenge?
Depends. Is this when he cut the rabbit out of the snake, or that he dated a girl named Madison Bumgarner?
To be honest with you, I don't know the questions. We're gonna test this together here. But just so everybody knows where I'm getting this from, Jason Stark on his blog on ESPN.com does Trivia Tuesdays every week, and I was scrolling through getting articles ready for today's show because we gotta have some stuff to talk about, and I saw Trivia Tuesday, Mad Bum at the bat, and I thought, how great would it be if we can embarrass Matt on his own show with some trivia about Madison Bumgarner of his own team? And I thought this would be entertaining for you guys, so we're going to bring it to you here in the second half of the program. Matt, are you ready?
Yes.
All right, so we're going to start the quiz here. I have to click on it. Only one of these hitters has a better home run ratio than Bumgarner since 2014, all right? Is it Nolan Arenado, Todd Frazier, David Ortiz, or Josh Donaldson?
You said since 2014?
2014. Better home run ratio.
I'm going to have to go with David Ortiz. Of how many home runs he's been hitting this year. And I feel like Donaldson didn't have his crazy breakout until last year. And same for Arenado and Frazier, at least in terms of home runs.
So you're off to a good start. David Ortiz had one home run every 14.09 at-bats. Mad Bums is 15.91. So you're one for one. Number two, only one of these hitters has a better home run ratio than Madison Bumgarner since 2015. Is it Yoenis Cespedes, J.D. Martinez, Kyle Schwarber, or Paul Goldschmidt?
I think I'm going to have to go with Schwarber just because of how few games he played last year.
All right, we're going to go with Schwarber. You are correct. Kyle Schwarber had one home run every 14.75 at-bats.
Yeah, because I think you wound up with, what, 16 last year?
That sounds about right. So how are you feeling, Matt? Two questions in, you're 2 for 2. Are you feeling the pressure?
No, I'm cruising.
You're cruising. All right, question 3. Bumgarner has now hit at least 2 home runs in 4 different seasons. Who is the only other active pitcher who has done that? I think you're going to get this one. Your choices are Mike Leake, Yovani Gallardo, Travis Ward, or Adam Wainwright.
I know that that's Yovani Gallardo because he just tied him for most homers by an active pitcher.
Yovani Gallardo is your answer? You are correct. He's the only other active pitcher with 4 multi-homer seasons. Question 4. Baumgartner has 72 career hits and a 180 career batting average. Which of these pitchers can brag that he beats him in both of those departments? Cole Hamels, Adam Wainwright, Jake Peavy, or Clayton Kershaw?
Well, I know it's not Jake Peavy because he can't really see. So every time he hits a baseball, it's kind of weird. I think Adam Wainwright. I feel like he's a pretty decent hitter.
You're going with Wainwright. All right, I'm going to click it.
For a pitcher.
You are correct. He has 108 hits and a 200 average.
Yeah, he mashes.
So you're 4 for 4. So if you get this one wrong, you only get a B. So the pressure's on. As you've probably heard, Bumgarner has hit 2 home runs against Clayton Kershaw. Who is the only other player who has hit more than 1 regular season home run off of Kershaw over the last 3 seasons? Is it Bartolo Colon, Troy Tulowitzki, Daniel Murphy, or Buster Posey? And just so you know, I didn't come up with these choices. I know the Colon one would definitely be me, but this was ESPN. This is Jason Stark.
Well, it kind of did a throwaway answer with Bartolo Colon.
Look, the man has power in that bat, okay?
I know it's not Posey.
So you're down to Tulo and Murphy then.
And I think, I know Murphy took him deep, but that was in the playoffs, so that does not count. So,
by default, you're going with Tulowitzki?
Yeah, he plays in the NL West a lot, or he used to. Yeah, I'm going to go with that one.
You are correct. Troy Tulowitzki has also hit 2 home runs off of Kershaw over the last 3 seasons. Yes, Daniel Murphy also hit 2, but they were both in the postseason.
Oh, he did take him deep twice.
Yeah, he took him deep in game 1 and then game 5. Or game 4. I think it was 4. But yeah, he took him deep both times in that series. So, Matt, 5 for 5.
You sound surprised.
Well, it's not no, because you're good at your baseball trivia, and you always have some sort of statistic that I don't know about when you throw out there. But I thought one of these would trip you up. I really did. I think we're gonna make this a recurring segment, though. This trivia stuff. All right.
Does Stark do this every day?
Stark does this every week. Every Tuesday. So I'll just tell you what the other ones were. How well do you know the 100-100 club was 2 weeks ago. Last week was just how good is Clayton Kershaw anyway. 3 weeks ago, it was Jose Bautista edition. And 4 weeks ago, he did Bartolo Colon edition because Bartolo hit a home run, I think, was when that happened. So every Tuesday, he does this. It's always 5 questions. So, yeah, we'll sort of incorporate this into the show.
Okay.
Sounds good. Now, I have another question for you. Who has the worst contract in New York, in baseball?
Well, if we're limiting it to the 2 players.
No.
No, we're not. Okay.
Well, if I asked you that question, who was the first name that would come to mind? Would it be one of these 2 guys?
No, I think it's A-Rod.
Right. Okay. So that's the point I want to get to. And this article was really intriguing to me, not only because I'm a Met fan, but because that name was left off this list. So Wallace Matthews, who covers the Yankees for ESPN.com, and Adam Rubin, who covers the Mets for ESPN.com, had a debate, and they wrote this great piece where they both made their case for both sides of who owns Big Apple's worst contract. Was it David Wright of the Mets or Jacoby Ellsbury for the Yankees? And what I took away from this was how there are a bunch of candidates that you can put on this list. You could put, Mark Teixeira's contract on this list. You can put Masahiro Tanaka. You could put A-Rod. You could have even put Jeter's contract. Although Jeter's not there anymore, so I kind of understand why he was left off. But they narrowed it down to David Wright and Jacoby Ellsbury who has the worst contract. And Matt, your answer would be?
I think I would have to go with Ellsbury.
I'm in the same boat as you. Looking at this from a neutral perspective, and I will just tell you right now that Matthews' argument is that Ellsbury at least is playing. Wright's injuries keep him off the field, and he can't help the team. Now, Ruben's argument is that the Mets have David Wright's contract insured, so the $20 million price tag that people like to throw around with how much he's being paid this year, the Mets don't have to pay all that if he misses up to 60 days. And Ruben's other point is Ellsbury's poor play isn't insured by the Yankees, meaning they're putting him out there, but he's not performing. And I have to agree with Ruben. The Mets, if they do get all of his, you know, the insurance money that they have, they pay him $5 million this year, $3.7 million the year after that, and $3 million. And Ruben's point is that that's not even what a middling reliever costs. That's less money than you'd pay Antonio Bastardo, who the Mets are actually have on their roster, or, you know, Bartolo Colon or somebody like that. They'd be paying him less than that to sort of play maybe in 40, 50 games every year and help them when he can. While Ellsbury, they're paying a lot of money. He's on the field and he's not helping them. So I thought this was really interesting that out of all the contracts that they could have picked, these were the two that they narrowed themselves down to.
Yeah, and I think some of it has to do with the fact that, you know, CC Sabathia's contract is ending next year. A-Rod's a couple of years down the road. Same with Teixeira. So I think if we're going overall from now going forward, I do understand why they chose these two.
They're both under contract till 2020. So that's kind of the reason why they both kind of make the short list.
And you know, I know in Matthew's column he says, you know, he doesn't want to hear about the fact that the Wilpons will recoup most of the money. Most big league contracts are insured the same way. We're talking about which player of those six is likely to return the most on the remaining dollars that are coming to him. But, you know, that's the point. It doesn't really matter how much David Wright is making. It matters how much the team is paying. So, you know, if they only pay him $5 million and he can contribute 40 games, that's more valuable, at least to the Mets. And the Yankees haven't really shown a willingness to put highly paid players on the bench or, you know, really understand the concept of a sunk cost. The Red Sox really put the stamp on that this year when they decided to sit Pablo Sandoval, despite the fact that he's making almost $20 million, but the Yankees never really have done that. So I think if Ellsbury's healthy, or at least not on the disabled list, and he's making all that money, he's going to play and he might wind up blocking someone, or he might wind up preventing the Yankees from being able to afford a replacement outfielder because of the $21 million that they do have to pay him, you know, because it's not insured. So I think all of that is really important. And that's why I'm sticking with Ellsbury.
Taking this a step further, I wanted to go outside of just New York and talk about guys who had the worst contracts in baseball. And two names came to mind right away. And Matt, you can tell me if you have other guys that came to your mind. But Prince Fielder and Albert Pujols were the first two names that came to mind for me.
Yeah, I would put Albert Pujols on the top of the list. I might be wrong on that. Just I haven't looked at all the contracts. Fielder would be up there. I don't know if I'd put him at the top just because two teams are paying him. So the Tigers, you know, sent a bunch of money. So I can't remember exactly how much the Texas Rangers are paying.
I just got another one.
But it's not, you know, it's not the 214 over 8 that he signed for, or over 9 rather.
Ryan Howard.
Yeah, but that one's almost over. That's done after this year, except for a $10 million buyout.
Okay. Any ones that you had that I didn't out of those three?
I'm trying to think. I think the Greinke contract is stupid.
Yeah, but hold on. I thought about it, but it's hard to judge that right now. I don't think that's fair.
I just think if we're making predictions, I would put that up there. I know he's good now, but paying that much money for a guy that's already 34 seems kind of irresponsible, especially for a team like the Diamondbacks. So, you know, he's going to be valuable for the next 2-3 years probably, but those last four might kill you.
Fair. Okay. Matt, it's my favorite time of the year. I think the Super 2 hurdle has been cleared.
It has.
Because... And you wanna do this one? I normally talk about articles, but I figured this one's up your alley.
Well, I think you should go with it because I don't have it on my screen.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you at the dry there. I thought something up about him. And so the news that we're trying to get at is that the Pirates have called up top prospect. I always mess his name up. Jameson, I think it's Talion.
Oh, you know what? I think you're right. I always say Tyon in my head, but I think it is Talion.
I think it's Talion. I think it's Jameson Talion. I think. And he is being called up to make his big league debut tomorrow against the New York Mets, and he gets the wonderful opportunity to go one-on-one, or, you know, he's pitching versus or against Noah Syndergaard. So welcome to the big leagues, kid. You got to go up against Noah Syndergaard today. And this is a guy that they have been ranting and raving about forever. Down at AAA this year, a 2.04 ERA, 0.81 whip, striking out 61 batters in 61 innings. Hasn't allowed more than 3 runs earned or unearned in any start. And this is a big get for the Pirates to call him up. The back end of the rotation has been filled with Juan Nicasio, John Neese, Jeff Locke. And Talion slots right in there with Garrett Cole and Francisco Liriano. And let's not forget that they have Tyler Glass now, who could be on the way as well. So things are looking up for the Pirates. Matt, are you going to watch this start tomorrow?
I don't think I can. I'm flying to Chicago tomorrow and will be running around grabbing things for a trip coming up. So I don't know. I will if I can, especially since I have Syndergaard on my fantasy team. I did confirm it's Taillon or Taillon.
Taillon.
Okay. Yeah, I looked at Baseball Reference and it had the helpful phonetic spelling.
There you go.
Bradburn and I were talking on Twitter. It's kind of funny, or not funny, but it's just very strange coincidence. Today is the 6-year anniversary of when Taillon got drafted number 2 overall, and that was the year that Harper went number 1 overall. So, you know, Harper's been in the league for 6 years, and Taillon's making his MLB debut.
So, another interesting statistic: this is the second rookie pitcher to make his debut against the Mets this year. Julio Urias did it earlier. Now, Jameson Taillon, or what, however you pronounce it. And people have asked if the next guy that they're going to face is Lucas Giolito from the Nationals, because he is probably going to be up at some point this year. And because the Mets and Nationals play so much in the same division, it would be rather interesting if they got the trifecta of young pitchers that they would face this year. I will definitely be watching the start. Obviously, my Mets are involved. But talk about big-time future stars of the game pitching matchup with Noah Syndergaard, Thor, and Jameson. This should be a good one. I think this is going to be a pitcher's duel, and it would be nice for this kid to make his debut and look good for the Pirates, who are trying to chase down the practically unbeatable Cubs.
Who did get beat?
Matt, we have a draft on Thursday. We close the show. Are you excited for the draft?
You know, I can't actually say that I'm terribly excited. The Giants don't have a pick, I believe, until 36 or something. They have one pick in the first 77. So I really have not been following the draft a whole lot this year, especially since, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a really highly touted group. There's no clear one. I think a lot of people are going with AJ Puck to the Phillies, but there's no Harper. There's no Strasburg. There's no, I'm trying to remember who last year was. And it was the shortstop. There's no, you know,
Dansby
Swanson. So it's just, it's not as talented of a group, at least from what I, you know, what little I've gathered. I have been watching more college baseball. A couple of buddies were up in Austin the other day and we were watching all the regional games. And I realized I actually know someone that made it to a super regional, I believe. I know a pitcher on UCSB, so I'm gonna try and watch him as much as I can.
So I think what makes this draft more interesting than most is the fact that there's not only not a clear one, but there's nothing clear down the rest of the board. There is none of these draft sites, Keith Law, Baseball America, none of them can agree on where people are going to go in the first round. Like, there's no consensus for any of these picks, which I think makes for a rather entertaining draft because, you know, anything can happen. So it'll be interesting. We will definitely recap some of it next week on the show.
I will say I am definitely interested to see who the Giants will take just because they don't have a pick, but just because they only have one pick for the first 77. I think you'll see them take a guy potentially like what they did with Joe Panic. He was not even in the top 100, but he got taken, I believe, 30th or 29th overall whenever he went. And a lot of people were really, really just shocked by that pick. And I remember watching MLB Network and they didn't even have a draft profile on him ready. They had to go hunt one down. So I think you'll see that if there isn't a guy that dropped for out of fear of his signing bonus, I think the Giants might have an interesting pick just because they'll take the guy that they really want, not necessarily the best talent.
It's one of the more interesting drafts because unlike with the NFL or NBA draft, there isn't a lot of mainstream coverage. It's sort of on the fringe, mainly MLB Network, and you know, some sites do it. So you know, this is the future of the game here that we're dealing with. So it'll be interesting to see what teams do and what teams put best player available first and what teams put need first. This MLB seems to be a place where best player available is sort of the be all end all, and teams like to do that over you know, a need. So definitely interesting. I will be watching. We will have coverage on the site all night long on MLB Daily Dish. That being said, if you, you know, follow the show and you listen to us every week, there's an easy way for you to get the show whenever you want, and that is to subscribe on the show on iTunes. Simple. You just go to iTunes, search bar on the top right corner, you search the Roster Rhetorical, the show comes up with our logo, you click on that, there's a button that says subscribe. And if you click on that, you get the episodes whenever you want. And this is simple. You're in your car, you're working out, you're at work, you're driving home from work, whenever, the episode will automatically be downloaded to your smartphone, your Apple smartphone, if you have iTunes and your podcasting app on there. It's, you know, it's easy. You don't have to worry about it. It will be there once the episode gets released, which, you know, means that I've edited and put it together and uploaded it, which normally happens the day after we record. So, you know, tomorrow's going to be Wednesday. When you're in your car on Wednesday, the show will be there once it gets released. If you aren't an Apple user or an iTunes user, that's understandable. I am, is why I use Android. And your favorite podcasting app has the same setup. You search the Roster Rhetorical, you subscribe, episodes automatically download once they are released. If you like to listen on your computer, blogtalkradio.com, search the Roster Rhetorical, all of our pages there with all of our episodes, or at the bottom of any article on MLBDailyDish.com. So if you're browsing the web, looking up some great baseball content that either myself or the wonderful MLB Daily Dish team is writing, at the bottom of every article is our player, and you can listen to the show there. Matt, I think I covered all the ways you can listen to the show.
I don't know of any other ways that you would be able to listen to the show, so I will go with that.
If there is one, then I've missed it. But I think I covered
it. Download it and put it on a CD.
Ooh, that's true. I forgot about that. You can download the show and listen to it on a CD. Or a Walkman. How about that? I don't even know what a Walkman is.
Yeah, you do.
No, I'm 21, so I grew up. No, maybe there were CD players when I grew up. Never mind. Okay, I'll take it back. I know what a Walkman is. So, all right, that being said, guys, thanks for holding, bearing with us the last couple days while we've been moving and stuff. It's been a hectic time, but now we're all set up. I have my brand new studios here. Matt has his brand new setup, and we are ready to get you through the summer with all the latest and greatest baseball news. So thanks for hanging out with us this week, and we'll see you guys next time.